29 May 1893 Statement of Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmed Sahib. I was extremely surprised to hear all that Dr. Henry Martin Clark Sahib presented today by way of proof in favor of the divinity of Jesus, the Messiah. Strange indeed were the statements that issued forth from the mouth of Dr. Sahib. It should be remembered that this claim of divinity that is attributed to the Messiah is not some small claim. It is an immensely grandiose claim. According to the belief of the Christian gentleman, any person who denies the divinity of the Messiah shall be thrown into hell. And according to the teachings of the Holy Quran, whosoever says someone is in reality God, or that I am verily God, shall become deserving of hell, as Allah, the Lord of Glory, states, وَمَنْ يَقُلْ مِنْهُمْ إِنِّي إِلَهُ مِنْ دُونِهِ فَذَلِكَ نَجْزِيهِ جَهَنَّمْ كَذَلِكَ نَجْزِي الظَّالِمِينَ. Meaning that whosoever says that I am God beside the true God, him shall we requite with hell. And it is also stated before the above verse, وَقَالُوا اتَّخَذَ الرَّحْمَنُ وَلَدًا سُبْحَانَهُ بَلْ عِبَادٌ مُكْرَمُونَ. And the Christians say that Allah the Exalted has taken to himself a son. Holy is he from having sons. Nay, these are only honored servants. Part 17, Ruku number 2. And so, after this, when we look to see what proofs do we have in hand regarding this, we find a treasure trove of such proofs. On the other hand, we find sound human intellect rejects this belief, while on the other, inductive reasoning testifies that till today no other example of its like has been found other than the one in contention right now. Meanwhile, the Holy Quran, which establishes its truth with innumerable proofs, rejects it as it states, وَيَعْبُدُونَ مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ مَا لَمْ يُنَزِّلْ بِهِ سُلْطَانًا وَمَا لَيْسَ لَهُمْ بِهِ عِلْمٌ وَمَا لِلظَّالِمِينَ مِن نَصِيرٌ. Meaning that they worship beside Allah such things for the divinity of which Allah Almighty has sent down no sign. That is to say, there are indeed always signs for a prophet, but they cannot be of any use to prove divinity. And then the Holy Quran says that for this belief of theirs, they possess no knowledge. Namely, they do not even have any logical arguments by which their belief could be strengthened. And then the Holy Quran says, وَقَالُوا اتَّخَذَ الرَّحْمَنُ وَلَدَا لَقَدْ جِئْتُمْ شَيْئًا إِدَّا تَكَادُ السَّمَاوَاتُ يَتَفَطَّرْنَ مِنْهُ وَتَنْشَقُّ الْأَرْضُ وَتَخِرُّ الْجِبَالُ هَدَّا أَنْ دَعُوا لِلرَّحْمَنِ وَلَدَا. Meaning, and they say the gracious God has taken the Messiah unto himself as his son. O Christians, you have put forth a most weighty claim. The heaven and earth might well nigh rent asunder thereat, and the mountains begin to tremble, for you make a man into God. Then after this, let us look whether the Jews were involved in any way in fabricating this God. The Jews were the first to inherit the Torah, and prophecies of their Old Testament were presented in support of this belief due to sheer misunderstanding. Did they, who used to recite their books daily, pondering over them, while Jesus, the Messiah, had also testified in their favor that they understood these books very well and that his followers should heed their statements, ever agree with even one of the many prophecies presented, saying that, yes, this prophecy informs us that Jesus, the promised Messiah, was indeed God, and that the Messiah who was to come would not be a man, but would in fact be God? When we look, we do not find any such thing. Every wise person can contemplate that if at all any meanness or prejudice would have developed in the Jews towards the Messiah, it would have arisen after his arrival. Before his advent, they used to look at those prophecies with great affection, interest, justice, and freedom, and used to recite the verses from these books daily, and used to write commentaries in their explanation. How strange it is, then, that these meanings remained totally hidden from them. Dr. Sahib says that manifestly clear prophecies about the divinity of the Messiah were present in the Old Testament. Now we are wonderstruck and astonished. If there had been only one prophecy that the Jews did not understand, they could have been excused. But how is it possible that despite there being hundreds of prophecies, even then they did not understand a single one? And at no time did they ever hold the belief that the Messiah would appear into this world as God. There were among them prophets and rabbis and sincere worshippers of God, but no one from among them wrote, by way of explanation, that yes, a God is also to come in the garb of a man. You must know this, that it is impossible that an entire people such as this, who held under its sway every single aspect of the Torah, should so unanimously commit the same error. Were all of them really ignorant? Were they all indeed stupid? Were all of them prejudiced? And if they were prejudiced, then what was it that made them so before the advent of the Messiah? It is clear that prejudices arise when there is something competing going on. Who could they hold prejudice against when no one had claimed to be God? Therefore, this consensus of the Jews beforehand that the Messiah to come would be human and not God is sufficient proof for a seeker after the truth. If they had desired to hide the truth needlessly, why would they admit to the coming of a prophet? Apart from this, other parts of the Torah also support and testify to the truth of this. Thus, it is clearly written in the Torah not to make a god of anything that you see in the heaven or the earth. As it is written in the Old Testament that, "Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth." Exodus chapter 20, verse 3. It is also written that if a prophet or a seer of dreams appears among you and shows you signs or some miracle, and the same should come about as mentioned in the sign or the miracle, and he asks you to worship and obey some other deity whom you do not know, then do not pay any attention to that prophet or seer of dreams. There are many such references in the Torah, and it is not necessary to write them all here. But above all is this declaration of Jesus himself that is worthy of attention. He says, "The first of all the commandments is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord." Then he says, "And this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent." John chapter 17, verse 3. And the word bheja, sent, has been used in the Torah on many occasions, and always with these same meanings, that when God Almighty, by appointing some servant of his and making him a prophet, sends him into the world, then at that time it is said that this is the servant who has been sent. If Dr. Henry Martin Clark Sahib can prove any other meanings for this bheja gaya, one who is sent, word, anywhere else beside the disputed verses, then he can claim from us any recompense that he desires in return. It should be clear to Dr. Sahib that the words bheja gaya, as well as makhsus, sanctified, have been used with reference to a human being. It would be sheer usurpation that now some other meaning should be given to these words. Nevertheless, if the Christians had all been in agreement regarding their principle of faith, and no group or sect from among them had remained outside of this agreement, then they could still have had some reason to be proud, but the situation is that now Dr. Sahib does not even have this much in his hand. I asked Dr. Sahib to state whether from among your various sects, the Unitarian sect recognizes Jesus as God. Is that sect not obliged to adhere to the same Bible that you are bound to? Is that sect unaware of the prophecies that you are aware of? So here, on the one hand, we have Jesus the Messiah, while trying to prove his innocence of the charge of blasphemy, saying, as recorded in John chapter 10, that he was no different in being referred to as God from any of the others so mentioned in the Bible. Then he also declares his lack of knowledge, that he does not know anything about the day of judgment, as to when it will take place, and then he also does not like that anyone should call him good. And again he says that I have been sent by God Almighty, and counsels his disciples that they should take the prophecies and other such matters to mean exactly what the Jews take them to mean, and to listen to and heed their words. And then, on the other hand, we see that the miracles of the Messiah are just like those of the other prophets. Nay, rather, to some extent, less than them by virtue of that story of the pool, which Dr. Saib must know well, by taking a bath in which people used to be cured of those same types of illnesses as is mentioned regarding the Messiah. And furthermore, we see that there is discord in Christendom itself. While one from among the Christians considers Jesus to be God, the other sect rejects their claim, and the Jews forcefully reject their claims as well. Furthermore, intellect also opposes those unreasonable ideas. And then there is that last prophet who has established with hundreds of proofs and signs that I am a true prophet. Thus, despite so many proofs against it, what purpose can the idea of one particular sect serve? And even that, without any proofs that the Messiah was indeed God. And what respect does it merit being given? That is why I had said that since so many concerted attacks are being made on your claim, you should present such proof in order to establish the divinity of the Messiah that is altogether free of ignorance and obscurity, and regarding which no one could have any difference of opinion. Unfortunately, you have not paid any attention to this and say that the prophecies you present are proofs and not claims. Dr. Saib, please ponder justly. When there are so many people standing over these prophecies to oppose and refute them, and the very people who are inheritors of the Old Testament do not accept the meanings that you ascribe to them, and when Christendom itself is split on the issue, then are these not mere claims or are they something else? In other words, when the matter is in dispute among your own sects, you should first settle this issue with the Jews, then come to a decision with the Unitarians. And then, when everyone has come to an agreement that the promised Messiah who was to come is indeed God, you can present this to the Muslims by way of a decisive argument. Then you say that for us there is no need of any signs in this age, that the signs were specific to the earlier epochs, and that when an object is once established, what need is there for signs? I say that had this matter been established, why would there have been so many disputes and why would there have been people present within your own faith to refute these meanings? Thus, since neither the soundness of these prophecies has been established, nor the claim by the Messiah that they apply to him, nor indeed consensus among Christians as to the particular meaning ascribed to them, then how can you say that these are proofs? You should also remember that your saying that signs were necessary only for the time of the disciples and that the disciples were the ones who were being addressed is proven false by this following argument. If the fact that the disciples were addressed about a certain matter is to mean that in that matter the things mentioned should only remain limited to the disciples, then surely in such a case the whole gospel is lost, because all the moral teachings that the Messiah gave were addressed to the disciples. Now, you have the opportunity to say that we do not need to turn the other cheek if we are slapped on one, since this was only enjoined to the disciples. I am surprised at your inquiry about the comparison between Ramchandra and Krishna on the one hand and Jesus the Messiah on the other, and your argument that if 10 people make the same claim, can one of them not be right? I am surprised at what you have written. I was merely arguing that if by making a claim anyone could be right, then there are many in the world that make claims. If there is one among them whose claim is true, then let him present his proof. Otherwise, we or you have no justification for selecting one from among the 10 claimants without any proof. This is exactly what I have been saying and writing repeatedly, that you have not presented thus far any rational arguments in support of the divinity of the Messiah. And the scriptural prophecies which you go on presenting have no value, being disputed as they are, which you translate to mean one thing, the Unitarians another thing, and the Jews something else again, while the Muslims have their own understanding. Therefore, how can those be considered to be decisively conclusive? You know that only that merits being called an argument which is decisively conclusive, and in its own right illuminating and manifest and affirmative of something, and not that it should itself be in need of proofs, for a blind man cannot guide another blind man to the right path. I reiterate, what I said earlier, that you know that in this tumultuous world, man is always in need of assurance and perfect cognizance. And every person indeed desires that the arguments that he wants to be accepted by others should be so categorical and sufficient that no room for argument should exist concerning them. And when a seeker after the truth remembers his death and his state of disbelief and ignorance and remembers the punishments that will be given to such people, he trembles and thirsts and hungers for any sign that could be a source of assurance for him and be a proof to act as a support for him. So I wonder why this tree of the Christian faith is being declared to be without fruit and why a path to assurance is not being presented to another who is showing a path to assurance in opposition to them. If it is not the custom of God Almighty to show signs, then why does he show signs in favor of Islam? Is it possible that darkness should prevail over light? Please leave off all such talk because I know full well that your heart will never ever be in accord with these statements of yours. It would be better that we conclude this issue with a written agreement between us. If, according to the conditions of this agreement that I suggest, I am not able to show some divine sign in accord with the will of Allah, the Lord of glory, then I shall be prepared to suffer whatever type of punishment that you desire. Indeed, I would be ready even to face the penalty of death. But if it is proven, then it will be your obligation that being fearful of Allah, the Lord of glory, you would embrace Islam. Dr. Henry Martin Clark Sahib, how can it be that the Christian faith should be the true one, but Islam should be the one that is helped? You may continue in your own right to pray to Jesus Christ that he should humiliate and leave this person without any answers, and I shall pray to my God, and then the true God shall prevail. What could be a better way than this to achieve a resolution of the matter? Who can accept your claims without any supporting arguments? Why do you go on presenting them again and again? Has your community accepted all these claims unanimously? Please follow the straight path and adopt the course by which truth and falsehood can be distinguished. Signature English, Ghulam Qadir Faseeh, President representing Muslims. Signature English, Ehsanullah acting on behalf of Henry Martin Clark, President representing Christians.